So looking at this list of contractors that are not exactly household names in many cases, is there anything that these companies on this list have in common besides the fact that they broke that $100 million revenue mark for the first time?
Yeah, we looked at all contractors doing business as prime vendors with the government, and we found 36 that surpassed $100 million for the first time. And that's the main thing that connects them all. But one key similarity that most of them have is that they do work for either Defense or the Homeland Security Department. And that makes sense since the Defense Department accounts for 70% of federal contract dollars. So it includes companies like Niche, Inc., which is a company out of Massachusetts that makes low-velocity parachutes, and Carter Enterprises, which is a company that makes apparel for military troops.
So you said 36 companies? Is that right?
That's right, yeah, 36 that surpassed $100 million.
How does that compare to years past?
I haven't done an analysis looking at prior years, but one thing that's definitely true over the last couple of years is that there are more companies losing federal revenue than in the past, and that's because the overall pie of federal contracts is declining. From 2000 to 2009, there was tremendous growth, about a doubling of federal contracts to, you know, well under $300 billion a year to well over $500 billion a year. And since 2009, the dollars have been declining, and that means for every company that has an increase in federal contract dollars, there's a company that has a decrease.
And how can you characterize the companies that tend to be losers? What do they have in common? Are they the big top of the market types of systems integrators?
It goes across the board, and the one thing as I've been looking at the companies that have lost revenue is that either they've got unhappy customers. And a good example is Supreme Food Service, which has been doing the food contracts for the military overseas. They are losing business largely because of billing disputes with the government. And in the past, maybe the government wouldn't have had as many options, but because so many companies are really looking for opportunities to growth at the expense of other companies, there's a company called Anum out of Dubai that is taking over that work and is one of the companies on our list. So it's a standard thing that, you know, if you have happy customers in the federal government, you are more likely to keep your contracts. But even more so now, there are lots of companies out there looking to take your business if you have unhappy customers.
So I guess it helps to be able to cook, but it sounds also like the market is much less forgiving than it was in the go-go years.
That's right. Yeah, and the companies have to be really flexible and quick to adapt. A lot of companies are reporting that the government had been awarding them contracts under what's called best value, which includes a lot of different factors, and now it's switching to more of a lowest price selection process. And if companies aren't prepared for that kind of change, they can lose contracts. There's a company called American Science and Engineering that does scanning equipment, and its major contracts were switched to lowest price, and it lost several of its contracts as a result.
We're speaking with Bloomberg government analyst Brian Friel. Now, Brian, do you have any sense whether this increased competition is actually resulting in more innovations in the market?
That's a good question, and I don't have a great sense of that yet. You know, a lot of companies say that the shift to lowest price would actually inhibit innovation because the government is essentially deciding on price and not giving credit to companies if they have really, you know, unique or different approaches that are more innovative than what the government might have initially imagined. But, you know, that said, there are so many companies fighting for a declining pie that that it's possible that the government can keep getting innovative products even as it really emphasizes price.
Of course, it could be that the innovation itself is a way to do something at much less cost than was previously done too.
That's right. And, you know, a key change in the market over the past few years is the shift to what are called multiple work contracts or IDIQs. And a number of the companies that are on this list of growing companies are companies that do business through these kinds of contracts. And they are designed to sort of break up work into away from sort of big systems integrations efforts into bite-sized project type work. And those kinds of projects can, you know, allow the government to get innovative products more quickly because it hasn't locked itself into things that you know, the sort of the old way of doing business. And so so companies like Essentia, which is a based in Virginia, Luke and Associates, which is a Florida-based healthcare company, those are both on the list, and those are both companies that do a lot of their work through these multiple award contracts.
And that raises the question to me. You've written about, I guess, a couple different industries, and you just mentioned two in health technology. You also write about fast growers in surveillance and space and special operations. Can you tell me a little bit about these fields and what the emerging market for these types of things are, who it's coming from in the government?
Sure. You know, we looked at our Bloomberg Government 200 rankings of the government contractors, which is what this list is sort of comes out of. We categorized the government's purchases into 43 categories, and we looked at which ones are growing and which ones are falling. And intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. That includes everything from sensor systems on drones to advanced radio communications equipment. That's a field that has been growing over the past decade, and several companies that make products related to unmanned aerial vehicles made the list of growing companies for this year. A surprising growth category is security guard services. Over the past decade, federal spending in that category has more than doubled. And a lot of the work is coming not just from the Defense Department in terms of, you know, securing, you know, military facilities, but also at the State Department. One of the companies on the list of top growers is a company called SOC, and that is providing security services to diplomats overseas as the world has gotten more dangerous with the threat of terrorism.
Now, these companies that have reached that threshold of 100 million, do we have any evidence that they got their start as set aside or small business types of you know, benefit programs?
Yeah, you know, the government has a variety of different set-aside programs that help small businesses sort of get a foothold in the federal market. One is called the Hub Zone program that sort of targets businesses in economically distressed areas. Another is the 8A program, which helps companies owned by people from economically disadvantaged groups. And 24 of the 36 companies that surpassed $100 million for the first time last year benefited in some way over the past few years from these kinds of set-asides. So it really does show that they do help companies get a start in the federal market.
And I guess when you hit that $100 million to $200 million mark, you're not really in the biggest ranks. You're no longer small. Does that make those companies takeover targets for those companies that may have lost revenue that want to get it back, and they'll just do it through an acquisition?
That's right. It can be a real challenge for companies when they emerge out of the 8A program. The 8A program, for example, has a 9-year window, and once that window is over, you're kind of on your own. And so companies either often get acquired at that point, or they go out of business. So especially 8A companies in sort of growth areas like health IT or ISR, they in particular have a chance to become acquisition targets. Companies in non-growth areas like construction and other areas that are falling, when they leave the 8A program, they're in more trouble because if the set-asides was the primary way that they got revenue, then they become less attractive as targets because without the set-aside, they wouldn't have won anything.
And how widespread is the phenomenon of people starting small businesses, taking advantage of those programs, then purposely selling it when they get beyond the threshold, then starting another one, using their relationships and their history with the federal buyers as people to start new companies and kind of, I guess, what you'd call serial entrepreneurs, growing companies out of 8A programs and then starting over?
Yeah, Bloomberg has done some analysis of some of the entrepreneurs who start AAs and have found that people do that they get a business going and over that 9-year period and then start another and in some cases start ones at the same time. And there are some legal issues when people do that, and they have to be careful not to get in trouble with the SBA over that. It just sort of points to sort of the fragility of companies at that stage. One of the companies on the list is a company called SIGA Technologies out of New York that makes a vaccine, and it's entirely relying on its federal contract for its revenue right now. And if anything went wrong with that contract, if Health and Human Services decided it wasn't happy with what the company was doing, it could go out of business as soon as HHS canceled its contract.